Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1940.
This is Edward Arnold, and on behalf of the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, I welcome you to another hour of good news brought to you from Hollywood. Starring Fanny Bryce, Connie Boswell, Hanley Stafford, Frank Travis, Benny Rubin, and Meredith Wilson with his orchestra. Tonight's guests of honor are William Gargan, who will present another of Damon Runyon's Joe Terp stories, and Miss Lola Lane, who, as all the world knows, is one of the charming Lane sisters who have been lending their talents to the Warner Brothers Pictures. Now, our first number is a lively little novelty entitled Confucius Say. And unless Meredith Wilson wants to make a statement, I don't see why we shouldn't get started.
Got a statement, Ed?
Shoot.
The way I figure it, the music is more enjoyable if you have a little of the background.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, yes. Myself, I prefer just to shut my eyes while you're playing and dream about a nice cup of Maxwell House coffee.
Well, it wouldn't fit with this song, Ed. Here's my statement, as follows. The song, Confucius Say, is based upon the philosophy of the great Chinese thinker Confucius, who lived from 550 to 478 B.C. New paragraph. I don't know why the girl typed that in, too. Confucius was the father of Confucianism, which was popular during the Han Dynasty, look up Dynasty. Oh, fiddle faddle. I'll have to replace that secretary.
Well, why don't you?
Well, I'm afraid Peggy wouldn't like it if I replaced the secretary. That's Mrs. Wilson.
What? Why, you poor man. You mean you can't even fire your secretary without hearing from your wife?
Well, it ain't so easy when your wife is your secretary.
Oh.
Now, leave me alone. I'm going to finish my statement.
All right. Is there much more?
No. The song Confucius Say was not written by Confucius. It was written by Carmen Lombardo and Cliff Friend. It is my earnest hope that these few remarks will make the number more enjoyable to all. Applause. Oh, nuts. I better play it.
Yeah, for heaven's sake, go ahead and play it, will you?
Make wedding bell ring out in month of June.
Confucius say,
if Gaddy act too shy, boy never say good night, he say goodbye.
Yo hi ho, not so funny thing. Yo hi ho,
with Mickey dancing thing.
Say,
when love comes, don't delay.
Oh, remember what Confucius said. No, I don't talk about anything.
Very good.
Well, that's what I thought, too.
I wonder what Confucius thought.
Well, hello, Bill Gargan. Hi.
Hi, Bill.
Hello, boys. Hey, I want to tell you what happened to me last night driving in from Santa Monica.
I was reading your autobiography yesterday afternoon, Eddie.
Yeah, thanks, and William. Lorenzo Goes to Hollywood, published by Liverite, $3.
Okay, it's pretty good, too. But, you know, I was thinking last night that if I had to write my autobiography, I wouldn't have anything exciting to put in it. You know, I'm just one of those guys that nothing ever happens to.
Something happened, Bill?
Well, wait till I tell you. I was driving in late last night, and I got to that place on Wiltshire near the, the old soldier's home. And just as I was going to turn...
You mean the north end of the home or the south end?
Oh, you know, where San Vicente comes into Wiltshire.
I see.
Yeah. The lights had just changed, and I was just starting into Wiltshire when
well,
I...
That would be the south end of the old soldier's home.
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. Anyway, just as I was starting, I saw a guy standing in front of me, and he thumbs me for a ride. Well, he looked okay, except he was wearing one of those deerstalker caps. So I stopped and let him in. But as soon as he got in the car, I noticed
that's the kind of a hat Sherlock Holmes wears, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, go ahead, Bill.
Thanks. Well, I noticed that the fellow had...
I didn't mean to interrupt.
The guy had two fingers missing.
Go ahead, Bill. Never mind Wilson. Go on.
Okay. We drove about a block, and
well, I didn't do anything.
We'd gone about a block when we passed up under a streetlight, and I saw a guy had a gun in his hand. Naturally, that made me a little nervous, I am
was
now.
Was it a revolver?
No, pistol. He had his hand on it, too, so of course I...
Right hand?
Left hand! Just then we were coming into that lighted part of Wiltshire, so I began looking for a...
Westwood!
Read it in my autobiography! I can't stand this, Eddie. The guy's nuts.
Now, really? Really? Meredith, you're certainly very trying, you know?
Well, what did I do? I was just getting interested in the story.
Why don't you stick to music for a while? For instance, I know a lot of people who'd just love to hear Connie Boswell sing Scatterbrain, and Connie, I happen to be one of them.
Thank you, sir. Come on, Meredith, cheer up.
Well, I didn't do anything. I was...
You're as pleasant as the morning and refreshing as the rain. Isn't it a pity that you're such a scatterbrain? When you smile, it's so delightful. When you talk, it's so insane. Still, it's charming chatter, scatterbrain. I know I'll end up at the play, because there's nothing I can do. It's just the same as being in a hurricane. And though my life will be too hectic, I am so in love with you. Nothing else can matter, you're my darling scatterbrain. You're as gay as New Year parties. You're as sweet as sugar cane. What a shame that you're a scatterbrain. When you dance, I think it's heaven, till about the third refrain. It's a shame that you're a scatterbrain. I'm much too analytic. I'm up that well-known tree. I've tried to understand your double talk in vain. So please forgive your critic, 'cause you mean so much to me. Nothing else can matter, my darling scatterbrain. It's a shame that you're a scatterbrain.
Fine, Connie, fine. Say, Warren.
Yes, Eddie.
You know, Warren, every time I see the picture of old Maxwell House on that familiar blue coffee can, I begin wondering what that famous old hotel looked like at the height of its glory.
Well, Eddie, go back with me 50 years, and I'll take you on a tour of inspection. Together, we enter the magnificent lobby paved in blocks of black and white marble, with a fountain in the center and a gallery running around three sides. At the top of a richly carpeted staircase, we find the main dining room, two stories high, almost 200 feet long. The room is aglow with the light of many candles and the loveliness of gracious southern ladies dressed in crinoline, lace, and satin. To our right are the kitchens, the carving room, the fruit room, and the wine room. But now, let's go into a very special room, a room where the coffee is brewed. As we enter, old Jerry, the man in charge, is saying,
"Ever since we've been getting this here new blend of coffee from Massa Joel Cheek, we sure do serve a lot of coffee."
Yes, that's the Maxwell House as it was more than 50 years ago. And because it was the home of the finest cuisine in all the South, Joel Cheek named his superb new coffee blend, Maxwell House, after the hotel. And since that time, Eddie, the fame of Maxwell House coffee has spread across the length and breadth of America. Today, more people are enjoying this wonderfully delicious coffee than ever before in its history. Today, you'll find Maxwell House in more stores than any other coffee in America. Why? Because this famous coffee is actually richer, more delicious, more downright satisfying than ever before. If you haven't tried Maxwell House coffee lately, friends, you're missing the matchless flavor of a wonderfully improved blend. You're missing true, natural coffee goodness brought to its peak by the uniform, radiant roast process. Yes, 50 years of experience have packed a lot of extra pleasure and satisfaction into that familiar blue can. So try a pound today, won't you? Discover for yourself why today this famous coffee is now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks. For many years, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has been interested in chemistry. In fact, he has a small laboratory set up in the basement, and you can find him there most any evening, tinkering among his test tubes. Tonight, Daddy is at his little bench experimenting. Listen.
Well, there it is. Yes, sir, there it is. I have to say it, I'm really proud of myself.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snooks. Have a look at this.
I'm looking, Daddy.
You know how I did it?
No.
You see that little tank? That contains hydrogen.
Yes.
The other tank contains oxygen. They're both gases.
Mm-hmm.
I took 1,240 parts of the hydrogen and 620 parts of the oxygen and mixed them in a cylinder.
Yes.
Then I wrapped it in a towel and touched it off with a match. Yes. It exploded 22 times, and there's the result. Look at it.
What is it?
A glass of water.
Are you thirsty?
No, I made it myself. Oh. It took me 3 hours to make that glass of water.
Why didn't you get it from the sink?
Oh, anybody can get water from the sink. The trick is to make it yourself.
Why?
Why? What would this world be today if everybody were satisfied to get water from the sink?
I don't know.
What would we do if it weren't for great chemists and physicists like Paracelsus, Archimedes, Newton, and Millikan? What would we be doing?
Getting water from the sink?
No. Look, they were men of science. Newton was the first man to discover the law of gravity.
Is it like gravy?
It's a natural law that has to do with things falling down.
Mm-hmm.
If you throw a piece of chewing gum up in the air, what happens?
It sticks to the ceiling.
I'm talking about outside where there's no ceiling.
I want some chewing gum, Daddy.
Never mind that. I'm trying to explain gravity. Newton discovered that all things have a tendency of attraction to the center of the earth. Everything must fall down.
Like pants?
Yes, pants too. And Newton proved that was true.
Didn't he have no suspenders?
Yes, he had suspenders. Look at Millikan.
Where?
He's a physicist. He worked for years and years building a very complicated machine that weighed 2 tons.
To keep his pants up?
No, to split the atom. And he finally achieved his goal. I suppose you know what he got when he split the atom?
Eve.
He got the Nobel Prize.
Why?
Because of his wonderful achievement. An atom is the smallest particle of matter known to man. In fact, it's so small you can't see it.
How do you know it's there?
Oh, I know, all right.
How?
Because I've studied all about it. Even when I went to college, my first 3 years I took dietetics and medicine.
Do you feel better now, Daddy?
I feel fine. Run along and let me work.
What are you going to do?
I'm conducting a little experiment, and I don't want you to bother me.
I won't do nothing, Daddy.
All right. Look, I'll show you how I make steam without any fire.
Can you make ice cream soda?
I'm a chemist, not a soda jerker.
Why?
Do you wish to observe this experiment or not?
Observe.
All right, now watch closely. I'm going to put some iron filings in this little bottle. Now I add some sulfur.
And some molasses.
No, I add a little water.
Is it going to be ice cream soda?
I told you I'm going to make steam without fire. Now look at the bottle. Watch what happens.
It's smoking, Daddy.
There. That's steam. See those little particles exploding and shooting out? Just like a volcano. How's that?
No good.
What do you mean? I made steam without fire. That's caused by spontaneous combustion.
Spontaneous combustion?
Well, that's close enough. I just wanted to show you how steam is made.
Oh, it's just like the kettle.
That's right. And you know why steam comes out of the kettle?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
So Mummy can open your letters.
Oh, she does, eh?
Yeah.
Well, what does she think she'll find out?
You know.
I don't know anything. And what are you making yourself so wise about?
I don't know.
Well, stop it. Might as well be living with a couple of policemen. Huh? Nothing. Go away and let me work. Can't call my soul my own.
What's in this bottle, Daddy?
Huh?
What's in this bottle?
Oh, it's a new kind of poison. I've been working on it a long time.
What are you going to do with it?
Oh, I'll find a use for it.
What are you looking at me for?
Snooks, I'd like to try something.
No, you ain't.
Oh, Snooks, come here. Don't be silly. Has nothing to do with the poison.
Mom, put the bottle down.
Oh, I didn't even know I was holding it. Now, this stuff happens to be rat poison.
Make a rat, Daddy.
I can't make rats.
Why?
Because no chemist, no matter how great he is, can make a living thing. Living things are born, and each one has a special use.
What was I born for?
There are some questions that even science can't answer. But here, I'll show you something. Now, this beaker contains a number of elements.
Elephants?
Elements.
Oh.
They're really basic salts. Potassium, magnesium, carbon, sulfur, and stuff like that.
Looks awful, don't it?
Snooks, in that beaker there is a man.
Huh?
Startling, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's everything in that beaker that goes to make a man. But of course, you can't see him.
Is it a little man who wasn't there?
Don't be facetious. Now you can see how wonderful chemistry really is. You can take a human being and break him down into 98 cents worth of chemicals.
How do you know?
I just did it. Look at that beaker.
There's a man in there?
A complete one. Yeah. Broken down, of course. I've got him in that jar.
A broken down man.
That's right.
What'd you do with his hat?
Oh, it wasn't a man to begin with. It's all the component parts that go to make the whole person. Man is composed of those chemicals.
Well, may make him live again, Daddy.
I told you it can't be done. Nobody has the power of creation. I can assure you that a man would be a horrible monstrosity if a chemist made him.
Did a chemist make Uncle Louie?
Now, you leave Uncle Louie out of this.
I didn't say nothing.
Your mind keeps wandering all the time. Can't you pay attention to anything I teach you?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, what's in that jar?
Uncle Louie.
Well, yes, in effect. But it might be anybody. Now I'm going to show you what you can do by using some of the same chemicals and mixing them with others.
You make Aunt Sophie.
No, here's what I make. Now, what is it?
A firecracker.
Right.
Shoot it off, Daddy.
I will, in a minute. But I want you to understand that this is not the same as an ordinary firecracker. This is perfectly safe and harmless.
Did you make it?
Yes. And I intend to make all the fireworks you'll shoot off on the 4th of July.
Why?
Because there won't be any danger of you hurting yourself. Besides, it's cheaper.
Oh. Well, shoot it off.
All right. Now, you hold it and I'll light it.
No, I'm afraid to hold it.
Oh, don't be afraid. I worked on this thing for months. I know it's perfectly harmless.
Then you hold it and I'll light it.
Okay. Look, just to show you how safe it is, I'll hold it between my teeth.
Uh-huh.
Ah. Now, go on. Light it.
All right. nothing happened.
Didn't I show you?
Safe ain't it, Daddy?
Oh.
Are you hurt?
No. I was going to have that tooth pulled anyway. Come on, let's get out.
Now, a super special contribution from Meredith and the orchestra, and I'm happy to announce I persuaded him not to say anything about it. It's a tune from one of the fine old musicals of 25 years ago, Madame Cherry. If you go that far back, you'll remember the principal song, A Birth of Passion. All right, Meredith. Very good, Meredith. Very good. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we continue with the good news presentation.
Excuse me, please. If he's not too much trouble, could I direct you to William Gargano, provided somebody knows where she is?
I beg your pardon.
Thank you. You are familiar with that little anecdote that she's illustrated about an Italian farmer?
What little anecdote?
Well, it seems a farmer near Milano have a barn, and the barn is 2 miles long and half an inch wide.
He has a barn 2 miles long and a half inch wide?
And?
What is he keeping it?
Spaghetti. That's making me hysterical.
Yeah, me too, yeah, me too. Do you mind if I ask, who are you looking for?
Oh, excuse me. I'm looking for William Gargano. She's here.
Yeah, I'll call her. Say, Bill.
Hey, someone looking for me, Eddie?
Yeah, this gentleman, this is Mr. Gargano, sir.
Oh, Signora Gargano, permit me to introduce yourself. My name is Giuseppe Roberto Rallentando Zola.
Giuseppe, I'm pleased to meet you. Yeah.
Thank you. You are familiar with that little anecdote?
Little anecdote?
Precisely. It seemed there was a traveling salesman who met a nice old lady, just like your grandmama. Huh?
Oh, is that so?
Yeah. He met her on the beautiful train at the Super Cheese.
Pardon me, but you mean the Super Chief?
Yeah, precisely.
Yes, yes.
I would not wish to matriculate with you.
Oh, no.
Excuse me, Senor Zola, but why do you keep telling jokes at the drop of a hat?
Oh, you are familiar with that little anecdote about the hat. Well, it seemed too.
Now, wait a minute, buddy. Wait a minute. What are you here for if I'm not too indicative?
Well, the splendor is all mine. I'm just a complete transatlantic voyage from Annapolis, first beginning. I'm a disembark in a Brooklyn. That's the last place I want to be.
Now, wait a minute, senor. Brooklyn's fine.
Oh, sure. Oh, that's so nice a place my eyes ever behold.
Oh, sorry.
I just mean it's the last place you're going to be when you finish with the boat, is it?
Oh, now I get it. Oh, you mean it's the last stop.
Well, thank you.
Yes, yes.
It's not my intention for you to make a Mrs. Construe. I'm arriving at this country just a fortnight.
A fortnight?
4 weeks.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, pardon me for asking, but who sent you to see me, Mr. Zola?
Well, this is of no consequences. The main thing is, I'm here, you're there, an opportunity knock about once in a life, boy.
Once in a life, boy? You don't mean once in a lighthouse.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh. Oh, you are familiar with this little anecdote?
Oh, yes, yes. Know it like a brother.
Well,
yes.
Seemed there was once a
month. Well,
from
don't a... tell it.
Oh, precising, yeah. I no like to osculate with you.
Yeah. Well, the feeling is mutual. Mr. Zola, I don't wish to be rude, but this is a broadcasting station, and we're giving a radio program. Would you mind telling me just what you want?
Signora Gargano, I'll put everything what I got in one word.
Oh, one word.
I'm offering you the golden opportunity to win a West in the Zola Development Company.
That's a long word. How much do you want?
Ah, senor, with me, money is no subject. I must see my dream come true. Uh-huh. A possibility it would surprise you to hear that I come from a long family of innuendos.
Brother, nothing can surprise me now.
Thank you. My father, that's a pianissimo Zola.
Oh, nice name. Yeah.
He was a professor of electrodynamics at the big American university.
Oh, an American university. Which university?
Sing Sing.
Nice college. Very nice college. Yes, indeed. What was your father's title there?
He had the chair of electricity.
Oh. Everybody's dying to get that job. And you want to follow in your father's footsteps.
Oh, I could not hope to be so pernicious. Because all I ever invented so far is the wireless.
All you ever remember... Say, do you know anything about Marconi?
Oh, very delicious with the cheese. Then, after this, I invented the television. You know what's a television?
Oh, yeah.
It's a big machine. You push your face in the front of Los Angeles. It's a come out in the back of George Washington.
It's quite a gimmick. But, unfortunately, I don't want to put any money in television right now.
Oh, I'm not asked for that. With a television, you can only see the program. But with my new machine, you can almost taste it.
That's very tempting. I'll take grape nuts with a side order of log cabin syrup. Well, go on with the invention.
Well, I no broadcast the taste, senor, not precising. My machine, she's called Aromacast. She's based on a new principle, smell-o-vision.
You know, folks, I think this fella thinks he's on the level.
Oh, sure. Fringus things. Just the thing. Just the thing how beautiful it would be when I broadcast the delicious aroma of a Maxwell House coffee good to the last drip.
That would really sell the coffee like hotcakes, wouldn't it?
Huh? Oh, I'm going to broadcast the hotcakes too. I'll smell up every home in America.
Listen, if you got a machine that really works, you'll make a fortune.
Well, there's only one drawback with it, you know.
What's that?
You gotta educate the American public.
Mm-hmm.
People in this country not know how to catch them up. The aroma very good, you know.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, for instance, thinks everybody who smell a delightful aroma smell like this. Look, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
Oh, no, you got it wrong. That's the bigger trouble, you got it wrong.
Oh, well, how do you do it?
Not 1, 2, 3, but like this. 2, 3, 4. to Trefoil. Now, will you please give me your check, please, for an investment?
Yeah, yeah. Well, wait a minute, buddy. Are you familiar with the anecdote about the fellow,
oh,
the traveling
salesman?
Please,
this is not time for jokes. If you want to invest in my company, I pay you great honor. I push your name up on a sign to ride along with me.
Oh, you mean I get top billing?
Precising.
Oh, wonderful.
Think of what a beautiful name, the Gorgonzola Company.
The Gorgonzola Company. Well, it fits smell-o-vision.
Think of you. Now, if you no got a check, now, I take $4 million in cash. That's all.
Well, that's very nice of you, Mr. Zola, but unfortunately...
Oh, yes. Excuse me, sir.
What's this?
This fella got away from me 3 times today already. Come on, Professor.
Oh, sure. I'm a come quietly. Excuse me. Goodbye, Mr. Goggin. Goodbye.
Say. You certainly meet a lot of broken bottles on this program.
Why, you poor sap, I knew the guys in the white coats were coming all the time. That's why I ducked out.
You did?
Precising.
Eddie Arnold, will you tell me one thing?
Why, Lola Lane, how are you? Anything your heart desires, Lola.
Well, I was sitting here just now listening to Mr. Zola talk to poor Bill.
Now, wait a minute, honey child. Don't rub it in.
Well, Bill, I believed him, too. But when he started talking about the aroma of Maxwell House coffee, I could almost taste it. Now, I know you serve coffee on this program.
That's right.
Well, where is it? I'm quite sure Bill could use a cup, too.
Well, Lola, we have reached the halfway point in our proceedings tonight. And that familiar fragrance in the air tells me it's time for our famous Thursday evening custom. Meredith, what are you doing over there? Where are you?
Eddie, he's observing our custom already.
For weeks now, Eddie, I've been pouring out the music while Warren pours the Maxwell House. And this week, well, I thought I'd pour my own.
Meredith, man knows no temptation quite like a steaming, freshly made cup of Maxwell House coffee. You're excused. And now, friends, wherever you are, all over America, pull up your chairs and join us in this moment of relaxation over a cup of the coffee that's good to the last drop. Meredith, may I call on you now for the music that goes with it?
Pray do, Eddie. Pray do.
We pause briefly for station identification.
Edward Arnold again, and we open the second half of our Maxwell House Good News program with another of Meredith Wilson's New Year specials, a brilliant arrangement of the popular song, Love is Just a Cheap.
Thing is certain.
certain when you're flirting, you will always come to be. Doctor, lawyer, tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, beggar, man, or thief. If there's a heart within you, you'll continue ever to be cross. If there is a miss to kiss, you'll kiss the miss, and never you'll be lost. Oh, let's go, wind the kisses go, wander on the go, dance a little, drink a little, dance a little, drink a little. Play your violin, sing to her, and sing to him a gypsy melody. Though your heart may ache, young hearts never break. You love and you are full, through all the
year. Recently, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer released one of Damon Runyon's best-known stories, Joe and Ethel Terp, Call on the President, currently showing at your favorite theater with Ann Southern, William Gargan, and Walter Brennan. 2 weeks ago, we had the pleasure of presenting Bill Gargan on Good News in the role of Joe Terp. So many people who heard the broadcast and saw the picture have requested more of Joe and Ethel Terp. So, we present another of Damon Runyon's famous Joe Terp letters tonight with William Gargan as Joe and lovely Lola Lane as Ethel. Joe and Ethel Terp, Go to Sea, Gone with the Wind, by Damon Runyon, adapted for radio by Robert Riley Crutcher. There's the mailman's whistle, and here's the letter from Joe.
Dear Mr. Runyon, the other night I took my wife Ethel to see Gone with the Wind, and as you know, it's a very long picture. I did not think I'd be able to take her because I had a job to do at the garage where I worked. I was working on a big 12-cylinder car, and the fellow I was fixing it for had to have it by 10 o'clock the next morning, and there was 3 hours work left to finish the job. But it seems that my wife Ethel had other plans. Ethel don't usually bother me while I'm on the job, so I know it must be pretty important when she shows up at the garage. I was under the car when she comes in, and she yells,
Joe, where are you, Joe?
Here I am, sweets, under the car, fixing an air leak.
Well, come on out, because I got something awful important to tell you.
What is it, sweets?
Oh, Joe, you're awful dirty.
Yeah, well, you can't stay clean when you're fixing an air leak.
But, Joe, I've been waiting for you to come home to dinner.
Oh, sorry, honey, but this fella has to have his car first thing in the morning, and I got at least 3 more hours work on it.
Oh, Joe, and after all the trouble I had waiting in line to get these tickets.
Tickets?
Yeah, and you should have seen the line in front of that movie. Honest, Joe, it was a mile long. Come on, I just know we're going to be late.
Well, listen, honey, we can see the second show.
But, Joe, there ain't no second show. That's why the seats are all reserved.
Reserved seats for a movie? Now, listen, baby, this here car has got to be fixed, and it's got to be done by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I can't stop just to go to a movie.
Just a movie? Why, Joe, this is an epic.
Epic or no epic, I can't help that, baby.
Listen, Joe, would I stand in line so long my feet hurt for anything less than an epic?
Honey Punch, what is an epic?
Well, you know, Joe, something that's so big you have to stand in line for so long. Well, your feet hurt.
Ethel, tell me, did you buy new shoes?
Well, Joe, it was this way. I walked into the nearest store, and they had a big sale.
Yeah, big sale.
So I went in and tried on every shoe in the place.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have seen the pair they had for $3.95.
Yeah, I see.
Only they didn't fit me.
Oh,
so I kept walking until I came to another place. And, Joe, you should have seen the pair they had for $12.
One pair of shoes for 12 pieces of lettuce?
But wait a minute, Joe. I got them down to $7.95.
$7.95. That's $8.
But, Joe, we're going to see Gone with the Wind, and you wouldn't want your wife to go barefoot.
$8. Well, one of us is going to go barefoot. This epic better be good.
Anyway, Joe, you're working too hard. What you need is a little change.
Change? You're telling me. Listen, Ethel, I got work to do.
Go on, Joe, and wash up. We'll be late. We don't want to walk in when everybody's crying and not know what they're crying about. You know, I've been feeling like a good cry for a long time. You understand, Joe?
All I understand is I got a car here with an air leak that's got to be ready by 10 o'clock in the morning.
But you can get up early in the morning and fix it. Because, oh, Joe, I've already got the tickets and a new pair of shoes, and I want to see Gone with the Wind.
All right, baby. All right. Stop crying. I'll take you to see Gone with the Wind.
Well, then, come on, Joe. It's getting late. The show starts at 8:30.
So, Mr. Runyon, I took my ever-loving wife, Ethel, to see Gone with the Wind. The first half was terrific. Then come intermission. So we go out in the lobby, and I says to Ethel, "Gee, I'm glad you got me away from work to see this picture, because it's great."
"Joe, I think we ought to go home."
"Listen, Ethel. You take me away from my job in a car that has to be ready by 10 o'clock in the morning. You buy an $8 pair of shoes. I don't even have time for my dinner. I'm crazy about the show, and now you want to go home."
"But, Joe, my conscience is bothering me. Your work comes first."
"Oh, I'll get up in the morning and fix that leak. Right now, I want to see what happens to the rest of the picture."
"But, Joe, you need your sleep. We can come back tomorrow night and see the rest of the show."
"But, Ethel, sweets, only tonight you told me you had to stand in line so long your feet hurt you. And you... Yeah, and how about the dough for the tickets?"
"Oh, don't worry about that, Joe. I'll go in and talk to the manager. I'll fix things up so we can see the rest of the picture tomorrow night for nothing."
"Yeah, fix things up. Now, look, sweets. I don't mind you going in and talking to the theater manager. But don't go getting me into any more fights."
"Oh, don't worry about me, Joe. I'll explain things to him."
"Yeah, you'll explain all right."
"Oh, there he is, Joe. The man over there with the wedding suit."
"Yeah, that's him."
"Oh, mister, are you the manager?"
Yes, ma'am."
"We want to go home, Joe and me. Oh, this is Joe. He's my husband."
"How do you do, Mr.
Turk?"
"How do you do?"
"How do you do?"
"We want to go home now. Joe has to get up early in the morning and go to work."
"Oh, that's too bad. Don't you want to see the rest of the picture? There's quite a lot more to come."
"Well, certainly we want to see the rest of it. But we can't stay any longer tonight. Joe has to get up early, so we'll come back tomorrow night and see the rest of the picture."
"Well, that's fine."
"Well?"
"Well, what?"
"Well, give us something to show the fellow at the door so he'll let us in without having to pay again."
"Look, lady, would you mind explaining that again?"
"Oh, she means we want rain checks."
"But it ain't raining, Joe."
"Listen, sweets, I was only using a familiar phrase."
"You see, mister, Joe has an Earl leak."
"I beg your pardon."
"Well, what I mean is, we can't stay to see the picture tonight, so we'll come back tomorrow night and see the rest of it. But we paid to see the whole picture tonight, and we've only seen half of it. So when we come back tomorrow night to see the other half, we don't want to pay any more money to see it." "See?"
"Lady."
"Oh, this is Ethel, my wife, Mrs. Turp."
"How do you do?" I mean, will you pardon me a minute while I think it over?"
"Certainly."
"Sweets, let's stay and see the second half. I guess I can do with a little less sleep for one night."
"No, Joe. You have to have all your sleep to protect your health. Don't forget you have a job and the man wants his car in the morning. So I think it's better you go home now and get your sleep. And besides, I want to get up early myself."
"But, Ethel, listen."
"Well, mister?"
"Lady."
"Mrs. Turtis."
"I know." "Let me put it this way. Suppose everybody in this theater wanted to go home after seeing half the picture and come back tomorrow."
"All right, mister, suppose."
"Ooh, where would I be?"
"Well, I guess you'd be standing right where you are now. That's silly, ain't it, Joe?"
"Ethel."
"I don't mean it that way. I mean, where would I be if all those people who saw the first half tonight came back tomorrow night to see the other half, but I already had a house full of people who wanted to see both halves at once? Where would I put everybody?"
Halves, half tonight, half tomorrow. Look, Ethel, why don't we go back in and see the last half? I don't mind losing a little sleep."
"But you won't have to, Joe. This manager here is an awful nice fella, and he'll fix it up so we can go back tomorrow night without it costing us any more money. Won't you, mister?"
"Well, lady."
"Mrs. Turk."
"Hey, yes, I know." I hardly know what to do about this problem, lady. I suppose I ought to put it up to Hollywood, but I'm going to take a chance on my own responsibility. I'll fix it for you."
"You see, Joe, I knew he would."
"Here, give this to the doorman when you come tomorrow night."
"Oh, gee, thank you, mister."
"Thank you."
"Gee, thanks."
"Come on, Joe. You see, there's nothing to it. All you have to do is ask."
"All right, baby. Come on." "Now, what's the matter?"
"Oh, Joe, my feet hurt."
"8 fish for a pair of shoes and they hurt your feet?"
"But, Joe, these ain't the shoes I bought."
"What do you mean, ain't the shoes you bought?"
"Well, I took mine off in the theater. You know how I do. And I don't know whose shoes these are."
"Come on, sweets. $8. Let's go home." So, Mr. Runyon, we went home with the pass and someone else's shoes. I don't know what Ethel ate for dinner, but she sure was restless all night. And I guess I can confidentially tell you, she snores a little. So I no sooner got the pound of the pillow when I hear... Oh, honey, can't you arrange to snore a little quieter? Oh, would you mind taking your feet out of my back? Sweets, would you mind taking your knees out of the back of my neck?
Joe.
Huh?
Joe, will you turn off the alarm?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, baby.
Did you get a good night's sleep last night, Joe?
No, darling, I did not get a good night's sleep last night. On account of you tossed around all night long. You didn't sleep good either, did you?
No, I didn't, Joe.
Well, what was the matter, baby?
Well, I was worrying what happened to Clark Gable and the rest of the pitcher.
Yours truly, Joe Turner.
A grand story and a marvelous performance.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie.
Lola, you really deserve a medal.
Well, Eddie, you can make me very happy indeed if you'll have all the bronzes struck off.
Just name it and it's yours.
Oh, please. You know, if Connie Boswell would sing All the Things You Are, I'm so crazy about Connie and I'm crazy about the song.
Why, dear, no sooner said than done. Connie, can we have All the Things You Are for Lola Lane?
Certainly, Eddie. For you and Lola, I'd be only too happy to whirl an Earl. You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. Breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star, the dearest things I know are what you are. Happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are mine. Of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song.
You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest thing I know are what you
is it, Snooks?
Don't Connie Boswell sing wonderful?
You mean wonderfully?
Why?
Because that's better grammar. She sings wonderfully, I sing wonderfully, they sing wonderfully. Wouldn't that be more correct?
No.
Why not?
Because you don't sing so wonderful.
Well, I don't propose to stand here and discuss my bel canto with you.
I didn't say nothing about that.
We'll talk about it some other time.
Excuse me, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Meredith.
Can I lead the band, Mr. Wilson?
Oh, stop it, Snooks. If you want to lead the band, you've got to know all about music.
And why is he doing it?
Well, by the way, Daddy, I've been meaning to talk to you about Snooks' grammar.
Oh, you have?
Oh, you have?
Pardon, Snooks. Daddy, I think you should do a little more about teaching your child to say the correct thing.
You, think so, huh?
Definitely. Why, only yesterday I heard her say to a group of children, "My daddy don't never take me nowhere."
Did you say that, Snooks?
Uh-huh.
There. Isn't that awful? Your child goes around saying to people, "My daddy don't never take me nowhere."
I'll say it's awful. I take that kid every place I go.
Well, you're just as bad as she is.
Suck him, Daddy.
I'll bet you can't even analyze a sentence.
When I want grammar lessons, I won't come to you. Snooks can analyze any sentence you can.
Me too.
Oh. All right, young lady. I'll give you the simplest possible example. You know what the subjunctive is?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mary milks the cow. What mood?
Huh?
Milks the cow. What mood?
The cow mood.
No, that's not right at all. You have to analyze a sentence. For instance, what does the cow stand for?
Mary.
The cow stands for Mary. Why do you say that?
How else could she milk it?
Well, it's no use wasting my time trying to learn you people grammar.
And now here's Warren Hull, whose helpful words need no introduction.
Well, thank you, Eddie. Friends, let's make believe you're jotting down a list of things you want from the grocer's tomorrow.
Now, let's see. I need butter, eggs, sugar, coffee.
Now, that item of coffee, madam. Instead of just writing down coffee, I wish you'd write down Maxwell House coffee, drip grind, or Maxwell House coffee, regular grind.
Why is that important, Mr. Hull?
Well, because today, with all the different ways of making coffee, it's just as important to use the right grind of coffee as it is the right kind.
I wish you'd explain.
Well, when you make coffee correctly by the drip method, the water passes through the coffee just once. Now, that means the coffee you use must be ground just fine enough so that all the flavor can be extracted in that one contact with the water. And that's just why Maxwell House comes in a special drip grind, a grind you can always trust to give you clear, full-bodied, flavorful coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. Now, on the other hand, if you make coffee in percolator or coffee pot, you know the water comes in contact with your coffee not once, but many times. Now, this means you need the regular grind Maxwell House to stand up in the longer brewing and give you the rich, satisfying coffee you should expect every day. Drip or regular, just ask for the Maxwell House grind that's right for your way of making coffee. We'd like you to discover the extra flavor and economy of perfect coffee, perfectly ground.
In the concert hall tonight, Meredith Wilson presents a song that received its first hearing 100 years ago. In 1840, Robert Schumann's great song of the Napoleonic Wars, Two Grenadiers, was acclaimed by music lovers. Through all the intervening years, it has been played and sung throughout the Western world, and today it is as popular as ever. And so we honor tonight Two Grenadiers, featuring the voice of Frank Travis.
Homeward bound. From prison the two were returning. When close to the native border they came, they hung their heads in mourning. 'Twas there that the sorrowful story they heard, how France had been crushed and forsaken. Russia's armies defeated and slain, and the emperor was taken. Then wept they together the grenadiers, these doleful tidings and learning. Then said the one,
my tears are hot, but hotter my old wound is burning.
Then spoke the other,
the end has come. My life I'd gladly offer, but I've a wife and child at home who but for me would suffer.
Who cares for wife? Who cares for child? My pity they do not wait, and let them go and beg if they hungry be. My emperor is taken. One promise, comrade, you must make. If this hard blow should slay me, who carry my body back to France and under a soil to lay me? And when my cross and its scarlet band over my heart you bound me, then put my musket in my hand and belt my sword around me. Then shall I lie there until the day when right shall awaken its voices, until the rumble of chains on the hill, the neigh of the trampling of horses, will mean that the emperor rides over my grave, with sabers flashing its splendor.
With sabers flashing its splendor.
Then on for the grave, for my grave will I spring, and rise at my emperor's defender.
And so Meredith Willson has presented once again a beloved song whose melody has stood the test of time. And next week, ladies and gentlemen, we have more than a great show for you. It's movie night on Good News. Daryl F. Zanuck joins with Good News in presenting Alice Faye, Richard Green, Brenda Joyce, and an all-star cast in scenes from 20th Century Fox's new production, Little Old New York. And to celebrate this occasion, Good News has added George Houston and Jan Duggan, the Barry Nightingale, in addition to our regular cast consisting of Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks, with Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Connie Boswell, Meredith Willson and his music, and of course I'll be tagging along too. So until next Thursday, this is Edward Arnold saying good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to fight infantile paralysis, join the March of Dimes. Send 10 dimes and a special greeting card for the President's birthday on January 30th. You can get one of these cards from your local committee. Do your part to help stamp out infantile paralysis. This is Warren Hull reminding you that leading grocers are now featuring Maxwell House coffee at new low prices. Prices the most modest budget can afford. Now, more than ever, is the time to make friends with Maxwell House. And now, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's now, more than ever, good to the last drop. All the things you are is from very warm for me.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.